I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. It's Tube Talk. Today, we're talking TV with our favorite tube talkers, Bridget Armstrong and Jamila Krempel. Nostalgia is in on the small screen. Remakes of One Day at a Time and She's Gotta Have It on Netflix are popular with younger audiences, but do TV reboots and remakes really work? Plus, which shows are sidelined and which ones are continuing in the wake of the sexual misconduct scandal rocking Hollywood? And black actors make up 20% of TV series regulars, so why are fewer than 5% of TV writers black? Then, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews The Revolutionists at Baltimore's Everyman Theater. We've got tips for holiday binge-watching on the Midday Tube Talk, coming right up after the news. And good afternoon. On this winter solstice, it's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. The shortest day of the year, the best show of the day about to happen today. It's the latest installment of Tube Talk here on Midday. We are checking in with our tenacious tube talkers, Bridget Armstrong and Jamila Krempel. By day, they are producers here at WYPR. By night, they prowl the channels, surveying the best and worst on TV as a public service to you, gentle listeners, so you can avoid the toil and trouble of encountering a lousy TV show. So on behalf of a grateful nation, Jamila and Bridget, welcome and thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So I'm stoked about this. And for the last 48 hours, the earworm that I've had in my head singing has been the Tube Talk theme song. So I've been walking around singing, Tube Talk, Tube Talk, let's have some Tube Talk. Then I realize there isn't a Tube Talk theme song.
I'm going to say.
And then I have like half composed a cheesy 1960s theme song, you know, sitcom theme song on behalf of Tube Talk.
That's so, in the tune of Jeepers Creepers, I think.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So not only have I composed a bad tune, but I have like stolen it.
What are you
like,
trying to say
I've
about
invaded.
This?
Well, I mention it only
Jeepers
to say.
Creepers,
right.
Compliment.
I mention it only to say that I begin our conversation in a heightened state of embarrassment. So I just want you to know.
We're all in this together.
Yes, we are indeed. So let's talk first about sort of who's in and who's out, given the, you know, this incredible scandal of sexual misconduct that has just been coursing through Hollywood and many, many other industries, public radio, to be sure, not at all exempt. So House of Cards, this Netflix thing, it was amazing, the quickness and, you know, just very firm clampdown that the Netflix producers did when the charges against Kevin Spacey came out. So, Bridget, where do we stand with House of Cards?
So, House of Cards is going to start production on their last season without Kevin Spacey in early 2018. He's been fired from the show. Netflix says that they have cut all ties. The show instead is going to focus on Robin Wright's character, who plays his wife, VP. And I think her story storyline the last couple of seasons has been fleshed out enough that she could carry the show for the last season. But Kevin Spacey is out. The show will continue and end with its last season.
Yeah, I heard from a friend who's a background actor on the show, and she has heard about, she didn't get this email herself, but she's heard about emails that have gone out to the sort of full-time production staff and some of the lead actors confirming that they will resume filming early next month, it looks like. Mm-hmm. And I also heard from a set designer friend of mine who said that right before Spacey was fired, the production company had spent $300,000+ building a set for the Kevin Spacey's character's house.
Right.
And they thought, they're not going to blow $300,000+ and then cancel the show.
So
he was pretty confident even back in October, November that this would go on.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, and it seems like an easy write to me. I mean, Jamila, you're a screenwriter. I mean, it seems like, you know, episode one, there's blood on the floor and oops, the president is dead or the former president is dead, right?
Sure. And I'm not, I haven't seen every single episode, but I do know that there's been enough sort of sketchy dealings, both of the characters that, and there's, you know, been some darkness around their relationship and some crimes possibly committed. So it doesn't seem too far-fetched to have that character just off.
He wouldn't be the first character to die.
Right.
How about Louis C.K.? Another thing, I mean, it's just like Louis C.K. all of a sudden just vanishes, not just from, you know, like his movie got, you know, they shot it, it was done, it was edited, it was ready to go. That got pulled, but like, trying to find a Louis C.K. comedy special or something on television is impossible, Jemila. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, and you and I looked the other day looking for it on FX, Louie, and it appeared that it had been pulled from its lineup. There's no mention of the show or any reruns that you can watch on FX. And I was interested in Louis C.K. also has greenlit several projects. He's used his name and his profile to get other people's shows on, like Pamela Adlon is a longtime contributor of with him, and Better Things is her show also on FX, and it's interesting to see sort of how herself and Tig Notaro, who's also working on a show with him, have distanced themselves from him, and you know, professionally, don't want that Louis C.K., which used to be sort of a booster, his name on a project, they don't want that anymore. Yeah. And I'm interested to see, just because someone's name disappears and they're not on a show, a lot of these bigger stars are executive producers, and I think it's going to be important to pay attention to see if their name, if you go line by line, if they're still going to profit off of these shows.
Yeah, we don't know that yet, right. Do we, Bridget? I mean, it's, even if they yank Mr. CK's name from the executive producer credit, it doesn't necessarily mean he's not still getting paid.
Exactly, and we talked about that a little bit before, but we don't know what their contracts say, and that would be the thing. You know, there could be something in the contract that says, if you embarrass us, if you harass people, if you assault people, you're off the project and we don't have to pay you. But there could also be something in the project that says, if Netflix or FX terminates these projects before they come to fruition, you have to pay a certain amount of money. So, the jury's still out. We'll have to see if these changes are sort of a response. And a right response, because given the allegations, or if there's something to really remove these men from the entire process.
Yeah, I know there's folks for Hollywood Reporter and Variety looking into this, but, you know, Kevin Spacey was a producer, executive producer with Netflix. Maybe House of Cards, you know, if it continues to profit, he'll continue to profit. By the way, you are welcome to join us with your suggestions for things to binge watch, your comments about your favorite things that you've been seeing on TV lately. 410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. We are also streaming live on the WYPR Facebook page. Bridget, how about a show called The Ranch? There's this fellow, Danny Masterson. He's been accused of very serious accusations of rape by more than one woman. That's another Netflix thing, but he's out too.
That's another Netflix thing, and Masterson is out. The show is going to continue. And a rare thing, Netflix actually released numbers about this show earlier this year, and The Ranch is one of their most popular shows. It stars Danny Masterson, who was on That 70s Show, and that's the guy who's been fired, and Ashton Kutcher is also on that show. So Netflix says they've cut ties. It's not clear as to how Masterson will be written off the show, but it's a show with a lot of cast members, so it seems like they would be able to continue with the
show.
They
can survive that hit. Yeah, and you say that it's rare that Netflix actually release numbers, because that's true. They are very close to the vest about who watches how many people and all that kind of stuff. How about Transparent, Jemila? This is Jeffrey Tambor, who was the lead character in this show. You know, quite distinguished because it was the first show about a transgender person in the lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now he's off of the show, and I think it's still a question, right, Bridget, if it will continue.
It's still a question of whether it will continue and how. The interesting thing about this one is that Jeffrey Tambor quit. It's not clear if he was forced out by Amazon. He said there was a politicized atmosphere, of course, after these accusations, because the accusations are coming from folks who were on the staff, whether as assistants or actors or various people. So he quit, and it's unclear whether he resigned because he knew it was going to come out it was true, because the investigation, or if Amazon helped him make that decision. Mm-hmm. But we don't know how they'll continue that show, and that's still up in the air.
Yeah, because one thing if, you know, a sort of one out of 17 people in the cast leaves, it's another thing if the lead person leaves. Now, he has denied the charges, as has Tavis Smiley, whose PBS show has been stopped indefinitely while there's an investigation. I mean, it's no longer being distributed. So, again, finding Tavis Smiley on television, virtually impossible. Now, he's been pretty adamant about his contention that the accusations are not credible.
Mm-hmm. He said that he's tried to make the distinction that he has had relationships with some of his staff members, and he says that's a totally different thing from harassment, consensual adult relationships. He doesn't feel like he should be sort of a part of this wave of what we've seen with men in power getting sort of facing some sort of blowback or losing their positions because of it. But I could say, you know, I've obviously never worked for the Tavis Smiley Show, but I've read an article a couple of years ago where it was pretty clear that, you know, he does have relationships with some of his staff members, and it is possible that because of maybe some of these producers are benefiting from that relationship and have maybe risen in prominence in their position on the show, that maybe some other staff members felt that that was not fair.
Yeah.
So we don't know the exact allegations right now.
Well, I mean, I know that in my circle of friends, I know probably two or three couples who met at work. And in one instance that I'm thinking of, it was a boss marrying his subordinate. You know, so sometimes it works out, but boy, it's tricky in the process.
And the thing we want to be clear with these accusations is that we don't know how many women, but it seems that they feel Tavis Smiley created an atmosphere. This is the accusation that he created an atmosphere that you needed to sleep with him or have some sort of sexual relationship to rise, to get ahead, to growing your position. So that's what they're actually alleging, that it wasn't consensual, that he somehow coerced or created an atmosphere that felt like they had to do it. So,
Celebrity chef Mario Batali is accused of sexual assault by several people. So he's been bounced from The Chew. What is that? What is The Chew?
It's like a cross between The View and a cooking show. So there's, you know, some talk about, you know, issues of the day, and then there's also some cooking. I've only seen
one or two
episodes. Well, no disrespect to people who like it. It's just not
it's
my
really
thing.
It's popular.
Yeah.
I love to cook.
Yeah.
I just don't like to watch people on television cooking.
Right. Hamming it up over a ham or something.
Yeah, right. And another cooking show, The Great American Baking Show. It's an ABC show. There's a pastry chef judge named Johnny Luzzini. Never heard of him either, I'm sorry. But this is hosted by Steph Curry's wife.
Aisha Curry.
He's the famous basketball player. And so now he's gone too. Huh?
And now he's out. And that show, I think, aired one episode. With Aisha Curry on it, on this current, there was one episode that accusations came out, and they decided to pull, instead of removing Luzzini, they decided to pull the entire show.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know. People and The Wisdom of the Crowd, that's a CBS show. The actor Jeremy Piven, he's been in a whole bunch of shows and stuff. Mm. So he's been accused, and so that's been canceled as well. Mm. You know, and you got to wonder, would these same people be bounced if the charge were racist remarks? And I can think of people. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a CBS commentator. He was like
Imus.
MSNBC. But there was a guy, and I'm just blanking on his name. He was a Vegas gambler type who commented on CBS football, and then he made a really racist remark. He was gone. So it does.
Bill Maher still on HBO. Right. He has faced no repercussions for his remarks.
He had a conversation with Ice Cube about his remarks.
He learned nothing.
Those are the repercussions.
Yeah. So it is interesting. And you know, when we talk about the culture changing, a lot of people point to more women being in positions of executive leadership. The Weinstein Company, for example, rumored to be the subject of a takeover by an all-women team. They would have an all-women board. They obviously would change the name, and they would continue to make movies, but with the prism of the female perspective in this. And that seems to be and even President Obama said, you know, the way to change this is to have more women running these shows on television. When it comes to diversity in television, we had Oscars So White a few years ago. We mentioned in the billboard of the show today that like some 20% of actors on television are black, but Bridget, the writers' rooms are a very different place.
The numbers are very dismal, right? So 20% is up from a few years ago. TV has always been better than movies when it comes to casting actors of color. But even 20% of show series regulars being black is up from a few years ago. However, television writers, so those coming up with the stories, the numbers are really small. It's 4.8%. And, you know, it when you're writing for Black characters, and not just Black characters, but especially when you're writing for characters of color, I think it matters that the people writing for them also understand their experience and what that character would say in the real world, how that character would move. It has to be authentic. And I think we see that on times with shows where you can watch and the character, the minority character, seems really inauthentic or seems there to just serve a purpose of being the buddy or the friend or the sidekick, and it is not a fully imagined, fleshed out character. And could that be because no one in the writer's room looks like that character? Could be.
Yeah, there was a show on, I guess it was in the 80s, maybe the probably the 80s when I was much younger, called 30-something. And I remember a criticism of the show was, it's a show about people in their 30s written by people in their 20s. Like the people who just hadn't quite figured out, you know, what it's like. And I think, you know, the experience of being a person of color in this country is unique and specific to the people of color. And that it's, you know, as hip as any white person might want to be, writing for that character has got to be difficult. It's not impossible. I mean, I think of Shiguro, for example, who won the Nobel Prize in Literature, you know, a Japanese Brit writing from the point of view of a butler, you know, in pre-World War II. It's possible, but, you know, you got to win the Nobel Prize in Literature to be able to do it.
Yeah, and it's and I equate it to if there's a room full of men or a room full of women writing characters who are of the opposite gender, and you're going to find a lot of stereotypes. You're going to find a limited range of just experience what this character is seeing. So it's just, it's TV is worth watching. TV written by people who can understand on a different level is worth watching. It's just better.
Jemila Krimple is a digital producer here at WIPR. Bridget Armstrong is a producer of Midday. We'll have more Tube Talk when we return. You can join our conversation 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. We were on the Twitter at Midday Tom Hall and Facebook Live, streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today it's Tube Talk with Jemila Krimple. She's our digital producer here at WIPR, and Bridget Armstrong, a producer here on Midday. For some reason, they find lots of time to watch television. You worry me a little bit. I mean, you're both very well read. You're very well rounded, but you got to get outdoors a little bit. You know,
There's no TVs out there.
There's no TVs out there. The big problem with the woods, no cable. If you're just joining us, as I said, we're talking about the TV hits and misses of 2017. We might put together a little list of things that we're going to think about binge watching if you have a little time off next week. We do have some emails and some calls we're going to try to get to in a second. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall, and we are streaming live on the WIPR Facebook page. A couple of other things, Bridget, about diversity in the writers' rooms. Issa Rae, who certainly has no problem being an authentic voice on this show, Insecure, which it's an HBO show, which I know you guys are huge fans of, and I haven't seen much of, but I thought it was very funny. But she is expanding her role at HBO.
Exactly. So Issa Rae, very quickly, is someone who, when wasn't given an opportunity, created her opportunity. She made series on YouTube, which Insecure was kind of born out of that, and now she's creating opportunities at HBO. So she is going to be EPing two more shows. One of them will focus on a bisexual Black man and his dating life, which is not something we've seen on TV. So here's an actor, a writer, actor, producer of color giving another writer, actor, producer of color an opportunity to tell this story that we haven't seen. The other is Sweet Life, which is going to be based in Windsor Hills, which I'm told is the Black Beverly Hills. And I think it's a sort of coming of age teenage story, but again, another story that we haven't seen, and that is created from Issa Rae having the platform to do yeah. this, basically.
So you have three really strong, you know, minority-centered shows. Him or Her, I'm looking forward to that one. That's about the bisexual black guy. She writes it with Trayvon Free, mm-hmm. who's a writer for The Daily Show. And then there's a woman named Lena Waithe. Mm-hmm. So she's an actress and a producer who plays a character on Aziz Ansari's Master of None. She's Great developed her own show for Showtime, I guess.
Yeah, it's called The Shy. Is it out yet?
So the pilot is out. I think it officially premieres in January, mm-hmm. but you can preview the pilot on Showtime.
Yeah,
if
The
you
Shy,
C-H-I.
It.
Yes,
like
it's
set in Chicago.
Set
in Chicago. Right?
And she's from Chicago.
Uh-huh. So it premieres January 7th. And Saturday Night Live, Jamila, they've had a really good year, I think. I mean, hits and misses, but
sure.
some really good years. And they have promoted Michael Che, mm-hmm. who does Weekend Update mm-hmm. with Colin Jost, as the first black head writer
yes.
at SNL. That's a huge step.
It is. It is. And he certainly deserves it. I think Michael Che is one of the most talented cast members and most talented writers that they have on the show. But it is important to note that he is not the only head writer. There are four co-head writers who have been named, and they all four are men.
Yeah.
So that is going to change.
Gone are the days of Tina Fey, who she was another head writer at
yeah.
SNL, but
yes.
not now.
Yes. Yeah. So that's going to change the types of skits that we see. Last year was a really successful one of the highest rated seasons of SNL in, I think it was 23 years. And that was largely based, some of the critics say, because there was a female head writer. And there was a male head writer who sort of, they worked together and they did a lot of female-centered comedy. So you didn't just see the same types of skits with the same types of characters. They really broadened their comedic horizons, and people really responded to that.
This is from December 9th, the episode, and this scene stars Kenan Thompson and a bunch of everybody else, and it's that they take on sexual harassment. This is SNL.
Amanda, there was one time at a meeting recently where I commented on your dress and your figure, and even though I meant it as a compliment, apparently it was still inappropriate. So for that, I'm sorry.
Oh, apparently? Okay, well, apparently you still don't get it. And that's why they fired your creep.
Yes, Mandy, Mandy, sweeter than candy. I remember I said something about that dress, too. I think it was along the lines of, woman, you are thicker than a bowl of biscuit batter. Won't you make old Charlie a pair with extra jelly? Then I did a little dance. Told you not to hurt nobody with that thing. It was inappropriate. That's my bad.
Charlie, you are just too much.
Oh, you know I ain't got no sense.
That's my bad. You are thicker than a bowl of biscuit batter. Oh, yeah. You
don't say that
yeah,
to anyone.
You want
to
be saying that around the office. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids, pay attention and write this down.
Yeah.
Don't say that at the office.
Yeah. And if I could really quickly, I thought that that was such a smart skit because it focuses on Charlie, who we heard, Kenan Thompson, is the front desk person at this company, at this corporation. He gets let go, and also the CEO, who's played by James Franco, gets let go. But you think it's because of sexual harassment because they both disclose, you know, some of the remarks that they've made to women. There's a twist. Charlie didn't actually get let go because of sexual harassment, but I think it's really smart because it takes the topic of sexual harassment and sort of dissects it a little bit more, because the female coworkers aren't up in arms because of the things that Charlie says, because he's an older black man. He's charming.
They give
and
him
he's
some
funny.
Slack.
Yeah, and he's also a subordinate. They don't see him as having that power because he works at the front
he's
desk.
He's a subordinate. Right?
Yeah. So yeah. I think it takes the conversation, propels the conversation a little bit more.
Yeah, and SNL criticized because in the first week after the Weinstein scandal broke, they didn't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't use it. They didn't do it at all. Then, of course, they have, you know, they're in with 2 feet. Let's talk about remakes and reboots, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that used to be on television
back on
television. Will and Grace, are you a fan?
Big fan. I was a big fan before when it was on early 2000s, late 90s, and I'm a big fan now. Although, I will say, before Will and Grace, I think the idea of having gay characters on TV was political in and of itself. Times have changed. There are not a lot, but there are more characters, a variety of characters. And I don't know if Will and Grace feels like they should nail comment on politics. Mm-hmm. The show has taken up the election. Karen, who is a very rich woman, conservative woman from New York, in this era is a Trump supporter. And it's interesting how the show approaches it. And I don't think it always works. I think the saving grace for this show is that the characters are still really funny. And I think that's what they were from the beginning, and that's what people liked about it. So I'll be interested to see what they'll do going forward and if they're going to stay away from the politics. Or
here's a little clip of the current Will and Grace.
What happened to the children you had who grew up and got married to each other?
That never happened.
Oh, what a relief. Nobody wants to see you two raise kids. But you're not still living together.
Oh, no. I mean, she's living here right now.
So, staying here for just a couple of weeks until the dust settles.
On your genitals?
On my divorce?
Because of your genitals.
Wait a minute. What about Stan? Is he still alive? Am I still rich? Answer the last one first.
You're rich, Stan's alive, both single, no kids.
Got it?
Filling in everybody updating everybody pretty quickly. Yeah, couple of emails. The CBS sports figure I was thinking of is Jimmy the Greek Snyder. Yeah. Thanks to Jay in Emmitsburg, who reminded me of his name. But he had some racially insensitive remarks, and he was bounced by CBS football like in a heartbeat. Chris writes in an email. It's worth bearing in mind that Melinda Gates called out these relationships in the current context, the relationships between employers and employees, like we were talking about Tavis Smiley. Yet she herself is an instance of marrying her boss.
But she had to be complicit in that marriage. It's not, I mean, at some point, right?
She worked for Bill Gates at Microsoft? Yeah. I didn't know that.
I don't think I knew that either, but I mean, and I do get you, she was complicit in that.
She wanted to have a relationship with him.
We're talking about people that don't want to have relationships with their bosses and their
very
bosses.
Very different thing.
Get it,
you know? Yeah. Very different thing. That's right. No means no, folks. That's all there is to it. Let's start with She's Gotta Have It. Mm-hmm. Spike Lee, famous movie back in the day, 80s, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's now been made into a TV series. What do you think, Bridget?
So, I have mixed feelings about She's Gotta Have It. I will say, from the beginning, I thought it would be interesting, and I think I thought this in the beginning before I watched it, if this character were older now. So this character is in her early 20s in 1986. This show is a reboot of a 27-year-old in 2017, same character. I thought it would be interesting to see that character older. So see that character in her 50s with maybe a daughter in her 20s. Mm-hmm. And that's not what they did on this show. They've updated it. It's in Brooklyn. So in a lot of ways, I think Spike Lee was a sort of purveyor in this way, in sort of showing this character, this young woman who was sexually free. She dates a lot of men, has sex with them, and is okay with it, not a lot of guilt behind it. And that's a big deal in 86. I don't know if it's a big deal in 2017. The show's shot beautifully. It looks wonderful. One of my favorite episodes on it, the second episode, deals with street harassment and assault. And I think it's for this fun, loving, sort of free character that she presents, you're reminded but these are things that she still has to deal with in her life. Mm-hmm. So it's been a lot of mixed reviews. Some people love it, or some people are not feeling it.
Spike Lee is one of those artists, Jamila, who's, you know, he's just so thoughtful about so many things in so many ways. And the movies, the biopic on Malcolm X, mm-hmm. and the movies that in which he's tackled these really thorny issues of race have always been worth seeing.
Absolutely.
What do you think of this show? TV's a different thing than a movie, you know, all that stuff.
But his visual style, the Spike Lee sort of style of filmmaking, definitely translates to this. You know it's Spike Lee, or at least if you're familiar with his films, you know it's Spike Lee. excuse me. As Bridget, I had mixed feelings. I feel like, again, this is a character that's not that we have seen as of late. So I don't know if it was necessary for it to come back again. I think a lot of people could get something out of their throats.
It's getting you choked up thinking about it, isn't it?
It is. Get something out of the original. Yeah.
So mixed reviews on Spike Lee, but, you know,
worth checking it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's go to the phones. Charlotte in Harford County, thanks for your call. Welcome to Midday with the Tube Talkers, Bridget and Jamila.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to back a little bit to the House of Cards discussion. In the British series, the president meets his demise by being executed by his wife, basically. Well, not directly. She hires somebody doing a public event. So that's probably where that could go. Like you had discussed, he's probably going to die. The other thing that I'm looking forward to seeing is this film that Will Smith is promoting right now called Bright, about a black cop that is racist against a real alien partner that he has encountered. I'm just kind of be interesting how they turned that.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call, Charlotte. Yeah, that's an interesting take on race.
Yeah. So it big deal for Netflix, too, because it's also one of these Will Smith blockbuster type of movies. Lots of action, but it's going to be on Netflix, which is a huge deal. But yeah, this looks like he's a police officer in some sci-fi future where there are aliens, and an alien joins the police
force. He does that a lot. That's almost typecasting for Will Smith
now. That's his thing. These blockbusters with aliens. So now Netflix has one.
Stick to what you know.
Shay in Baltimore, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm not a regular TV watcher, except for Netflix, I love. But I'm calling about the other day, I was just at home and I had the TV on, and the show Hell's Kitchen came on, and it was a contest of, you know, cooking contest. And the contestants, between themselves, the one team, they were talking about one of the team members, and they were saying that she was, you know, off her meds, that she was mentally ill, that she was just, you know, mental. I mean, all these derogatory things that you could think of. And I was just, I mean, I was sitting there with my mouth agape. I couldn't believe, you know, if they put any other word in there besides mental or, it's terrible.
Right. Well, we get your point, Shay. Thank you so much. That's an interesting thing. I mean, there's a long way to go when it comes to people being sensitive and appreciative and understanding of the other. I mean, it's just there's a long way to go in society and a whole long way to go on television. Yeah, I don't. Do you guys know this show at all, Hell's Kitchen?
I've caught
it. Another one of these celebrity
it's been on
chef
for a
shows.
Long time.
I think the premise is they're all mean to each other, and so is the host.
Yes,
right?
Yes, the host is a
very
tyrant.
Nasty.
Count me out. Yeah. I mean, I got no use for that personally. Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. I want to feel the love. Yeah. I don't want to feel the hate. Bobby in Baltimore writes in that he loves the Netflix original Wormwood. Follows the true story of a biochemist at Fort Detrick who was unknowingly dosed with LSD by the CIA back in the 1950s and fell out, in quotation marks, out of a 13th floor window. Wow. So it mixes a documentary style and dramatic recreation. Great actors, compelling story about the dark side of our government secret ops, from Bobby and Baltimore. You guys know the show at all, Wormwood?
Seen it on Netflix. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I've heard it's very good. So I'll be binging it.
Thanks. All right, binging that, because we do want to talk about some things that folks may want to binge. Another remake, One Day at a Time. That's another Netflix thing. Boy, Netflix is just all over the place. Mm-hmm. This was a thing that was on in the 70s. You know, this single mom with a couple of kids and the loving super in the building. Now it's been updated and it's a Latino family. So again, we've got a little more diversity happening on TV.
Right. I didn't watch the 70s. Version of it, and I've checked this out. Rita Moreno plays the grandmother. I think the premise of the show is a mother, single mother, raising her kids. There's a super involved in the show that's very much a part of the cast. But yeah, it's a new take on it. The family was like a white family in the 70s when the show was on, and now we have a Latino family kind of playing out that role of the single mother and the grandmother living in. Rita Moreno's pretty funny on it too.
Yeah. So. And Jamila, we also have an updated version of Roseanne.
It's coming out.
So-called white working class, very much in the news during the campaign between the now President Trump and Hillary Clinton. It'll be interesting to see how they update this thing. Is it going to be the same people?
Yes. Every single one of the main characters from the original show is coming back, and I am so excited. I loved Roseanne, and I'm really looking forward to it because we haven't seen working class people on TV. It's like we saw it in the, you know, since the... Well, I won't say since the age of TV, but it seemed like it was the norm in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And then all of a sudden, everyone just lives in a mansion and, you know, we don't see them at work.
You got Empire, and
I want to see
even shows like Blackish. I mean, they're very, that's a very successful family.
Yeah, right. Doctor and ad exec. And
you do find that you see poor black people on TV.
Sure.
So like Issa Rae is poor on Insecure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about Atlanta a lot.
She works for
their whole thing is struggle. Like, you know what I mean?
Issa Rae and her show works for a nonprofit.
Money struggles are a thing that they actually talk about on the show. But you're right. White working class, you don't see a lot
of that
on
TV. Yeah, and we need to. That's an important experience. That's an important story to tell.
Mm-hmm. Hari Kondabolu. He's been on our show a few times. He's a very fascinating guy. He's made a documentary exploring the representation of Indian people on television. And he's done it through the lens of the only Indian who was ever on television, who was a cartoon character, Apu, from The Simpsons. Let's listen to a little bit of this documentary about Apu.
I hate Apu.
Hate Apu?
Hate Apu.
When
and because of that, I dislike The Simpsons.
Wow, the whole series.
Yeah.
The whole series?
Yeah.
I love The Simpsons. I just don't love that character. But the whole
I have
thing.
Never been able to divorce the two.
I love The Simpsons because...
You hate yourself.
Because this whole film is me trying to get over the fact I hate myself.
How many of you were bullied in any capacity as a child?
We raising hands?
Yeah, raising hands. We'll do the hands thing. Yeah. Okay, now how many had to deal with, like, being called a poo or that being referenced?
Everyone rolls their hand in that
Everybody.
Clip.
Everybody has that. So this is the documentary. It's on True TV. It's called The Problem with Apu. In that clip, that's Hari Kondabolu talking with the actor Cal Penn, who was in Harold and Kumar, about, you know, the character Apu. And, you know, one saying I hated the whole series because of it, and the other saying I love the series, but I hated the Apu, you know, the sort of clownishness of the way that they did. Couple of interesting spinoffs coming up. Grownish is a spinoff of Blackish. Blackish is a show I've only seen a couple times, but I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
Funny. So who's Grownish, Jemima?
Grownish is the oldest daughter of Dre and Rainbow, who are the parents on Blackish. How do you pronounce her name?
Yara Shahidi.
That's the actress's
that the
name.
Who plays it.
So this is about her growing up, going off to college, and sort of her coming of age. A lot of people liken it to the Cosby Show being, or Blackish being the Cosby Show, and Grownish being A Different World. And
where their older daughter goes to college.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because for a lot of us who love the Cosby Show and love that sort of franchise, we have lost that, coming back to sexual assault, sexual harassment allegations again. So it sort of feels like a way that we can walk through, just have that story, have that experience through this family.
So we're running out of time. So Bridget, I want you to give us your top three picks for binge watching, because a lot of folks will have some time next week. So your first one is Queen Sugar. It's on Oprah's network.
Queen Sugar on OWN. Great show. Wonderful. Check it out. So it is the season just wrapped, so you can catch it. It'll be back on in 2018. So you're not missing anything.
And it's about folks on a sugar plantation.
Yes,
right?
So it's about a family and their sugar cane plantation in Louisiana. They inherit this. It's the modern times. They inherit this farm, and there are three siblings, and only one of them can farm. So you see what happens.
Right, one's on the Stars Network called Power.
Power.
Real
this
quick.
Is 50 Cent's show. It's a good show.
I like him.
Drugs, crime, that sort of stuff, drama. People get shot. People have relationships they shouldn't be having, that sort of thing. So if you're into that, great show, Power.
Dicey stuff. And how about Greenleaf? That's about a church,
That's
right?
about the megachurch. Megachurch setting on also on OWN. Drama, again. pastors doing things they shouldn't be doing, and parishioners gossiping and telling lies and all sorts of stuff like that. Really good show. Lots of drama if you're into it.
Yeah. I worked at a bunch of churches in my music career, and let me tell you,
right?
That all doesn't happen. And Jemima, how about you? Top three.
Oh, man, top three. I'd say catch up on SNL. Mm-hmm. Insecure, certainly. We've
Issa
talked about
Rae,
it. Yes.
HBO.
Master of None, Netflix, had a very successful last season. And I love me some SVU, some Law and Order. So whenever it's on, I watch it. So it's worth binging.
Kicking it old school with a little Law and Order.
I like to see some fake justice. We need to see that sometimes.
Fake justice, because sometimes we don't get enough real justice.
Exactly.
All right, Jemima Kremple, Bridget Armstrong, very much appreciated. Happy holidays. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Jemima Kremple is the digital producer here at WIPR. Bridget Armstrong is one of our producers here on Midday. They are our tube talkers. We'll have links to some of the shows that we've talked talked about on our website, wypr.org/midday. Coming up after a break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick has a review of The Revolutionists at the Everyman Theater. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.